The people who were on the Titanic, the radio officers who stayed at their posts until the vessel eventually sank, they were Marconi employees. They were radio officers. They were employed by Marconi and put on board with the equipment to operate it and to maintain it, but mainly they were there to send telegrams and make money for the company. The radio officer was introduced when the company started in 1899, and the take-up of the service was very, very slow for the next few years, mainly because ship owners were notoriously conservative people. They looked on such expensive frills as radio as being, all right, it's okay for the big passenger ships, but not for us. And so the business grew very, very slowly until 1912. And in 1912, there was this fatal collision of the Titanic with an iceberg. And as a result of the massive loss of life that occurred then, there was obviously an inquiry. And the outcome of that was legislation. A legislation which said that all ships must carry a radio telegraph station so that they can send telegrams ashore and alert people in distress. And they should also carry a man who would operate the equipment. Well, that was a massive boon for the equipment, for the company, in that they had legislation which said, you will carry our equipment and you will employ our men to operate it. Fantastic. So the company then grew from 1912, and the role of their radio officer, apart from just sending telegrams for the passengers and the master of the ship, maintain the equipment. The main role grew to maintain other equipment, because, of course, as developments went on, things like depth sounders and eventually radars, direction finders, all sorts of equipment was added, electronic equipment. And the man on board who looked after it was the Marconi man. And that went on for many, many years, until around the 1960s and 1970s, which is about when I joined the company, things started to go sour. The current climate, economic climate, then started to put pressure on shipping companies to reduce costs. And they looked for ways to reduce costs, and largely what happened is they flagged their ships to, or registered their ships in other countries which had lower regulatory requirements than countries like the UK. So their costs went down, and they employed third world crews from third world countries who had very low wages. So, of course, it was a very negative impact on Marconi Marine's business. But as part of the organisation, they had set up service depots to support the ships around the world. So we were left with a situation with a contracting market and lots of expenses, people around the place, on ships and elsewhere. So pressures on ship owners to reduce costs resulted in pressures on Marconi to reduce costs. At the same time, developments in electronics introduced all sorts of new types of communication. And these new types of communication did not require a man with special skills to operate them. And their radio officer and his special skills have been able to send and receive Morse, suddenly became less important and eventually became redundant. So by the time in the 1980s the satellite relay equipment was introduced, whereby ships could have access to all the same communication facilities that are available in an office ashore, at that time the days of the radio officer were numbered. So although the radio officer began his job, or his job was created, in the 1900s, and expanded throughout the 20th century, by the end of that century, it had gone. They no longer needed skilled people to work the equipment. The equipment was operable by anybody, and the job disappeared. So within 100 years, the job was created, expanded, and disappeared completely. Sort of hero to zero in a nutshell. But when I joined the company in 1960, I trained and qualified as a radio officer, and was appointed to the company in Liverpool and immediately sent to a ship in Avonmouth. And I thought that my life had changed drastically. It had, because within the course of a day or two, I'd gone from being a student to being the third radio officer out of three on a passenger liner ship. And we used to take 100 passengers from the UK to the West Indies, spend a few days there visiting various ports, loading cargo, and then return to the UK with passengers and several thousand tons of bananas. that doesn't seem impressive, but the important bit from my personal point of view was that we were treated as were the first class passengers. So we ate excellent food. I had a steward who looked after me. I had pleasant company, and we spent a lot of time in wonderful weather. And every 5 weeks or so, I got a week at home on leave in the UK. So life was wonderful. Now that went on for about 9 months or so. At the end of that 9 months, I was deemed responsible enough to be sent away on and inflicted on the world's merchant fleet as a radio officer. And suddenly things changed. But still, I was had a steward and I was fed whatever food was fed on the ship. I did about 5 years doing that on various ships, from a passenger cargo ship of under 1,700 tons to a tanker of over 60,000 tons. After about 5 or 6 years of that, I was offered a job working ashore for Marconi Marine in their service base in South Shields on the Tyne. That was something of a culture shock because, firstly, I had to find a place to live. I had to make my own bed. I had to feed myself. I had to learn the local language. And generally, it was something surprising. Plus, of course, I then got married. That solved some of the earlier problems, but caused others. About a year or so after I'd left the sea, I got offered a job in Chelmsford and came down here to work in the technical division of Marconi Marine. I was part of a small team that looked after, generally, main purpose was the helping with the rollout of new products into service, but it also dealt with oddities that didn't fit in the normal pattern and sorting out problem ships overseas or wherever they occurred. So I got involved in a number of different things, like installations on oil rigs and ports and harbours, Dover Harbour Radio, things like this, where we installed what was basically marine equipment, but on non-marine applications. So we did that for a while, and I got involved with special things like yachts. I was involved with the fitting of the radio on Sir Francis Chichester's Gypsy Moth 4, the one in which she sailed around the world. I also got involved in the 1968 Round the World Golden Globe Yacht Race, which was won by Robin Knox Johnson, now Sir Robin Knox Johnson, and his yacht Suhaily. I fitted the radio on there. I also fitted the radio on a less successful competitor, Donald Crowhurst's Timothy Electron. He was a gentleman who disappeared at sea while he was on the race. So we did that, and then I eventually got made technical manager, eventually became operations manager, and that's when I retired in 2002. So I had a fairly wide range of things, mainly doing sort of problem-solving tasks. But I also learned that one of the things I learned at sea was that it was very easy to overcomplicate things. People would look for problems where they didn't exist, and that certainly occurred after I came ashore, and tried to overcomplicate things. But one thing I learned at sea was it wasn't necessary to do that. On one ship I was on with an Indian crew, I was friendly with the electrician. He had an Indian crewman as his mate, electrician's mate. And this guy lived, you know, came from a remote village in the foothills of the Himalayas. And chatting one evening to him, I said to him, well, what do you do when you're not at sea? How do you earn your living then? Because the arrangement was that people had to compete to get to sea. They had to wait. There was a waiting list and so on. So I said, well, how do you earn your living? Oh, he said, it's not a problem. He said, I have a herd of goats. So I said, yes. He said, well, what do you do with the goats? He said, well, every day I take them into the jungle and they browse on the vegetation there. So I said, oh, yes. I said, is that not a bit risky in India? You know, are there no sort of big predators and things like that around that would attack your goats? Oh, he said, that's not a problem. He said, there are lots of leopards and some tigers, he said, but it's not a problem. So I said, how come? So he said, well, I have three very good dogs. So I sat and I sort of had a vision of these dogs, you know, defending the sheep and him and holding the tigers at bay and so on. So I said, well, what happens then? So he said, well, when the dogs smell the tiger, they bark very loud. So I said, yes, and then what? He said, then I run away very fast. So it doesn't mean that you have to have very complex solutions. Simple ones sometimes work. Thank you very much.